Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LeDuc. Following the death of her husband, Rose locks herself in her bedroom for the better part of a year, leaving her daughter Emma to care for her through the closed door. When the church sends a pastor to help coax Rose out of her room, he soon finds that Rose is not the only one using barriers to hide her true feelings. This is the plot of Too Much, Too Much, Too Many, a new play by Megan Kennedy that is currently being produced by the Roundabout Theater Company's Roundabout Underground, a program that showcases new plays. Too Much, Too Much, Too Many is directed by Cheryl Kaller, the Tony-nominated director of the critically acclaimed Broadway production of Next Fall by Jeffrey Nauts. She has directed at many theaters, including Primary Stages, Williamstown Theater Festival, and New York Stage and Film, and has directed and developed new plays and musicals with writers including Christopher Durang, David Henry Hwang, Nick Blamire, Billy Porter, Alan Menken, and many others. She joins us now. Cheryl Kaller, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you so much. It's so great to be here, and it's nice to see you again.
Too Much, Too Much, Too Many. How did the script come across your plate?
I have three very huge fans in the artistic directors of the Roundabout Underground in that, and I say artistic directors because they all have other jobs. Robin Goodman, who is a commercial producer, she's on Cinderella now. She produced In the Heights. I think she's called a creative consultant, but more to the point, she and Jill Rafson, who is the literary manager at the Roundabout, and also their associate Josh Fiedler, have just been so supportive of me, and they read this play and they connected me to this beautiful play and to Megan Kennedy, who every second working with her has just been a revelation.
Roundabout Underground is the up-and-coming works space that Roundabout produces. It's a really, really small space, 62 seats.
It's 62 seats. It's really small. So if one person is in a bad mood, you feel it.
And is that a benefit to a new work, having such an intensity of such a comparatively small audience?
I think that it's not. It doesn't feel like a small audience because everyone who's coming to see the play wants to be there. And I cannot say enough about this program. This Roundabout Underground program, which is so highly supported both financially and artistically by Todd Haynes and his team, they give a brand new writer the opportunity to be produced in this exceptional production, and I want to say it's learning ground, but I think it's learning ground for everybody because you don't normally get to work in a 62-seat theater where there are definitely limitations to the space. It's a black box. It has soffits and air conditioner vents and certain exits, and you have no upstage crossovers and all that. So for an old lady like me, it's a good reminder of why we do what we do. The work is so pure and so supported, and I only have positive things to say about what they do for new up-and-coming writers down there. It's why we do what we do.
What is special? What are some of these special elements in this script, in this story by Megan Kennedy?
Megan must have been around before because she is an old soul. She is an old soul. She has a wisdom that reminds me of when my second daughter was born. I looked in her eyes and I knew she had been around before as well. And Megan wrote a play about loss. She wrote a play about hope. She wrote a play about family. She wrote a play about faith and what a family with hope, with faith, with care, how one survives through loss. And it is just the most beautiful exploration of how do we move on when we've lost someone.
Perusing your credits in New York and at New York Stage and Film, you have visited, worked with loss and family a number of times before. What do you think it is about those themes that you keep responding to? Obviously, they're explored different ways in different pieces, but they're recurring.
I love this question because that's exactly... I lost my mother unexpectedly. My mother died when I was 29 years old, and she was 52. And I've just been recently given the gift of outliving her. And then this play came across my desk. Well, not my computer, not my desk. Right. My mother died when I sat Shiva for my 30th birthday. I had two children, and then my father died in 4 years. So my life has been defined from that point on by birth and death, and by gift and loss. And I lost a lot of faith in God during that time. And then all of a sudden I get this beautiful, perfect baby that's now 22 and graduated college. and then another perfect baby, and then I have loss again. And I also gave up a big part of my career to raise my children. Yes. And so, and I've never considered that loss. I've only considered that gain. And so those themes are how my heart beats. And family is how my heart beats. And Megan wrote this play about this long-term love affair and what happens when that's taken away. And then the child of this couple and what happens to her. And I never had the privilege of watching my parents get old. And so for me, this was divine intervention of this theme and circumstance of all my friends, because I'm 53, all my friends are living now through what happens when our elderly parents need us. Or what happens when one of our parents dies and the other one is still there? And how do I, as their child, fill up that loss? And I didn't get the privilege of having that or the pain of having that. So this play has let me live vicariously. And then it throws in faith and the Bible and Walt Whitman and poetry. And it's just everything I love about life.
In this play, at the beginning, the father of the family you mentioned, he has died when the play starts. And the mother responds by locking herself in a room, not coming out, and her daughter is in the house, and a pastor comes, and the door doesn't open. Is it challenging to direct actors who aren't looking at each other?
I thought, okay, so yes. Yeah. It was incredibly challenging, and we're still tweaking it, because Phyllis Somerville, who plays the mom who's locked in her room, has no idea what's going on the other side of the stage. And even though in rehearsal it was all open and there weren't walls and there weren't doors, we put them up in the rehearsal room so that they could experience not looking at each other and what it was like. And then, of course, you go into the theater and you go into tech and you change 50 million things and then you're in previews. So Phyllis, like I was giving a note, she said, "But wait a minute, isn't she doing this anymore?" And we had forgotten to tell Phyllis that Rebecca wasn't doing something on the other side of the stage anymore. So yes, it was incredibly challenging. And I really called upon, I had directed for National Theater of the Deaf and a new play for them many years ago. And I called upon that experience, directing actors who couldn't hear each other. And now these are actors who don't see each other. And we've also... the actors and I have also explored a lot of their private moments on stage, because there's a lot of time that they spend talking to each other but not being able to see each other. So there's a certain amount of delicious privacy that they have. But of course, we wanted to also normalize it all, because that's the way these people are living now, and that's their normal.
I read the script, and it seems like there's, in addition to them not being able to see each other, there's a lot of, written right in the script, intense looks from the people who can see each other, and a lot of pausing and consideration, because they're confounded by the situation they're in and don't know what to say to each other or what to do. How do you mind those pauses and make sure that they're not overindulgent?
That's a great question, and that's where you just have to get to your knees and, you know, and bow to the roundabout theater, because you do that with an audience. You take your best guess at it, and, you know, I'm the queen of pauses. I mean, Next Fall opened with almost a 73-second pause before we even started talking. I love pauses, so I think that's another reason why they brought this play to me, because I really like pauses. But we're still mining the pauses, where every audience... this play, because we're in a 62-seat house, the audience is way more part of it than in bigger houses. They really are. And there's no proscenium. It's a room with a beautiful set, by the way, by Wilson Chin, who he and I also did Next Fall together. And so I think we learned from the audience, and the actors really had these four actors are just extraordinary. So where they were naturally taking their pauses, I really mostly had to just tweak it up. Confounded is the word you used. That's so smart, because there's such a hole in all of their lives that life is confounding to them, but they all have so much hope that that's what makes them pause. The pauses have to be really active, like in Pinter. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not, contrary to Next Fall, where, you know, the first act they had hope and the second act there was no hope for this young man. So if you didn't say ever see Next Fall, I blew it for you, but it's not. Just read it. You'll know. These pauses aren't indulgent, because they're filled with... how do I get through this pause in order to move on, whatever that moving on is?
You just mentioned Next Fall a number of times, for which you were nominated for a Tony Award. And the last time we spoke, it was right after that.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And you were, you know, talking about how the whole Tony season was fun. You were having a great time with it. You, you know, appreciated the recognition. Does that Tony nomination, is it still with you every day? Maybe not personally, but... whomever is trying to get you to work on something of theirs can always say, Tony nominated director Cheryl Keller.
I think more people say about me, Tony nominated director Cheryl Keller, than I say about myself.
Sure.
The Tony nom did for me, I think that it's really wonderful to be recognized by your peers. There is no two ways about that. I don't drink that Kool-Aid, though. There were a lot of really... really, really wonderful plays that were directed brilliantly that season that I could rattle off even now, 3-4 years later. I think that it was a blessing. I think that my two daughters got to see their mother come back at a career at 40 years old and walk the red carpet at the Tonys at 49 and a half, when women are told that they're over the hill at 40. That's what it meant to me. That's what it meant to me. The fact that I was Tony nominated, yeah, I might make some more money sometimes because of it, but I absolutely, what it was being part of this community. And now I'm in a basement, four floors down. I'm like in a bunker directing a play for 62 people a night. And that means as much to me. And that the fact that the people who put me together with this beautiful play, that my work spoke to them, the Tony nomination has nothing to do with that. Nothing for me.
Cheryl, it is always wonderful to speak with you and to see your work. Thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thanks for seeing me, and it was wonderful talking to you, and you asked really smart questions. Thank you.
Cheryl Keller is the director of Roundabout Underground's production of Too Much, Too Much, Too Many by Megan Kennedy. The show is currently running in the Black Box Theater in the Harold and Miriam Steinberg Center for Theater on 46th Street in New York City. More information is available on our website, wamc.org/roundtable.